down the brass tacks. Now, the lady called from the United States to say that they had booked on JetBlue and want to come to Barbados. And the airline has just canceled the flight and given some reason about going somewhere else for that decision. I'm also told here that WestJet out of Canada has canceled too. This person says that they had a relative booked last week to travel back to Canada on the 12th of August. WestJet canceled the flight, and there's some speculation as to what the airlines may be up to. It's important for somebody at an official level to tell us whether what are the issues that we are facing with airlines trying to get here. Now, you got to bear in mind that within the context of COVID, we now have supply and demand issues. You have far more demand than you have supply. All right? And what this is likely to do is push up the cost of travel between these points. And I don't want to go further than that, other than to ask what exactly is going on here. Running hand in hand with that, though, is the deep concern that many Barbadians have about the flights coming back. From what we've seen initially, these flights will bring COVID with them, and people are very afraid of that. But having said it, you also know that we need business activity in this country, otherwise businesses are going to die. Big companies are struggling. Big companies are struggling. And when that happens, it will impact on the livelihoods of Barbadians. This is not the toughest part of this experience yet. This is the early phase. We are waiting to see when that three-month moratorium that the commercial banks have given to people runs out. What's going to happen then? And then if we have a resurgence of COVID and we have to shut down again, more business is going to die. We are really caught between a rock and a hard place. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
I want to first comment. My area of discussion today would be elections in the 21st century. But I first want to commend two callers. The guy, I don't like to use the title, but they call him anti-American, and another guy who discussed the Guyana elections and the impasse and what is happening with those foreign countries. I want to commend them because they have been, both their points have been making here, anti-American as it relates to those bodies, that rating agencies and others, and the other guys looking at the role of foreign governments and foreign institutions and the impact on us here in the Caribbean. But in the interest of accuracy, I need to say that when you spoke to the guy who said about spoke about the Guyana election, you said that the CCJ ruling said that the chief election officer was wrong to throw out 115,000 votes. In the interest of accuracy, I must say that is not true. The ruling is separate from any comments that might be made by a judge leading up to the ruling. But the CCJ ruling stated that the election of a president and members of the National Assembly can only be done on the sole basis of votes counted and information furnished by returning officers under the Registration of the People's Act. It also stated that Order 60, which is the order which led to the recount, is in tension or in conflict with the Guyana Constitution and could not create a new election regime. And the interesting thing about that is all persons you gave me information I didn't know this morning that Britain had also made statements about imposing sanctions, whatever. All these countries, first starting out with Ms. Motley, then Mr. Gonzalez, he's the new chairman, CARICOM, OAS, Commonwealth, Mr. Beckles, Professor Beckles, the you know, ABC countries, America, Britain, Canada, and Europe, all saying the same thing. The recount, the votes from the recount must be the one used and declared the winner. The CCJ stated those recount votes cannot be used. So it is so laughable that they are continuing on a particular narrative when the court, the highest court, their declaration was you could only use votes that were counted with returning officers. When the recount was done, there were no returning officers present. And the registration of the people act stated clearly what must be done. I just feel that the people in the Caribbean are getting strange information. I made a note of Wednesday, 15 July 2020, VOB 1230 news on this matter. I started to write it down as Stetsenbaum was saying it. It was amazing what he said in that report. I didn't get all of it. I like to be accurate because I know you would question me on one word missing or whatever. I tried to listen it at the 4:30 rebroadcast and at the 4:30 news, and it was different. A lot of what he said, which to me was inaccurate in that 12:30 news, was omitted. But let me talk about elections in the 21st century. I want us in the Caribbean to understand why persons might...
Before you go any further... Sure. And just on a point of pure clarification, this is a release from the Caribbean Court of Justice. In a judgment, it says, CCJ rules that the Guyana Court of Appeals judgment and Chief Election Officer's report were invalid.
Yes.
In a judgment delivered today, the Caribbean Court of Justice ruled that the judgment handed down by the Guyana Court of Appeal on June 2020, which judgment was used by the Chief Election Officer to invalidate over 100,000 votes, was invalid.
Yeah.
The court also decided that as a consequence, the 23rd of June 2020 report of the Chief Election Officer was also invalid. The CCJ's judgment was a unanimous one to which all the sitting judges contributed. The public can determine for themselves what the truth is.
Yeah, but you're not saying anything that contradicts me. All I'm saying to you is the court ruling stated you cannot use the recount results because it is in contradiction with the Constitution and the Representation of the People's Act, which states that the only results that can be used, votes that are counted in the presence of returning officers. Yes, they said the Court of Appeal and the fact that the CEO relied on the Court of Appeal ruling to present his second report, is either the second or the third. That doesn't contradict what I'm saying. It just highlights the fact where they came down on the fact that the recount cannot be used. Therefore, all these persons, Mr. Beckles, CARICOM people, all the country, America, Canada, all those, talking about recount vote, it tells you there is something afoot here. And this is why I want to speak on elections in the 21st century. I looked at a clip done before, I don't know if it was the House of Assembly in America, done in an interview with Miss Brittany Nicole Kaiser. She's an American lady who was the former business development director for Cambridge Analytica. And she spoke about what they were doing in Guyana previous to this election and in this election. Then there is also a company called Mercury Capital. Mercury Capital is a public relation and lobbying company. When we see Republican and a few Democrats, but mainly Republican congressmen making statements about Guyana and certain narratives that reflect the similar narrative of the American High Commissioner, you see the Commonwealth Secretary, they keep pulling in these people making these comments. We have to ask ourselves, but this is strange. Every time this matter is before the court, some influential person comes out and make decisions which could be prejudicial. Before the CCJ started to have their case management conference, Ms. Mia Motley, then outgoing chairman of CARICOM, talked about by what executive fiat can the chief election officer throw the result and blah, blah, blah. The representative and lawyers for Mr. Granger had to beg the chief, the president, and the panel sitting at the CCJ, please do not allow that to influence you. Of course, they said not, but Chief Justice of Guyana is meeting to discuss, to look at a case, again, just the case management hearing, on the day the American embassy says, we have put sanctioning visas for, we are withholding visas for persons, financiers, parliamentarians, members of APNU, and judicial officers. Now tell me if that is not targeting a judge who is about to sit, the Chief Justice, when you are saying you are going to put sanctions on, including judicial officers, if results don't come a particular way. They have been asking stupid comments like Mr. Granger should concede. But Mr. Granger has not yet been declared the winner. The chief election officer has given his report reports twice or three times saying Mr. Granger has won. But the GCOM chairman, Mr. Justice Claudette Singh, is now telling him use the recount figures when the CCJ says that can't be used. So there, before the court to decide that, he has not been declared the winner. So how can he concede and move away? No winner has been declared. And I'm saying to people, in the 21st century, what we are going to see is more and more. It happened in Trinidad. It happened in Guyana. I think, I can't remember if Dominica also used it, but more and more we're going to see the use of this notorious firm, Cambridge Analytica. We're going to see the use of lobbying firms like Mercury Capital, who have been able to send out statement and to send a narrative where the Granger government has been very, very slow in putting out their points of view, which states we will abide by whatever the Court of Appeal says and whatever GCOM declares. Nobody says that, you know. They all make it seem as though Granger holding up the election don't want to concede, even within CARICOM. And I will end by saying this. That is how election is going to go, where persons who want regime change, they want government change, you will see pressure for something as simple as a matter before the court, not fully ventilated yet.
Before you go any further, though, I want you to do me a favor. For my own enlightenment, can you show me and tell me exactly where the CCJ said that the recount could not be used? I need it.
The CCJ did not use the words that the recount could not be used.
No, Sammy, No. Whatever words they used, I will.
Yeah, but how can I show you something? I'm making a call now. How you ask me how I can show you that? You don't think you're asking the impossible?
No.
I am making a call now.
No. It is not the impossible. You don't necessarily have to do it immediately.
Oh,
before
okay.
The show is finished, just you can call me directly. And just indicate to me exactly where I will find that particular
Remember
quote.
What I said. The CCJ says the recount order is in tension or conflict with the Guyana Constitution and could not create a new election regime. If it is in conflict with the Guyana Constitution, the Constitution has
no,
to prepare.
I really tell you the truth. I am just...
I
must tell you
said.
All. When it comes to the Guyana elections... The kind of aggro that I am getting from people on this is just amazing. And that is why I am prepared only to deal with the facts that are before me. I'm not here to make a call one way or the other. But the most important thing for me is that whatever has been the will of the people of Guyana, then that will ought to be respected and be devoid of any fraudulent activity. What is happening, the length of time that it has taken so far, is really turning out to be nothing more than a farce overall. But beyond that, I don't think... It is better for me in a situation where this situation is highly contentious to listen to arguments for and against. So if the Trini lady come and she put her point of view and you upset with it, don't ask me to defend nothing. Come and put your position yourself. I am here to broker the arguments on both sides. So don't expect me to take any side on this because it is so highly charged and contentious. That's my position on this right now. Okay, those of you who are writing in and saying this and that, come on the air and talk. Respond to her. Okay? Down to brass tack.
Peace be unto you in the name of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, Mr.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. I was forced to call you today listening to... I love to listen to Brass Tacks daily. But after hearing, I think it is Tallboy and whatnot talking about the transport board.
Yes.
If it was him, I don't know. Nevertheless, my problem, I do not want this bus situation where the electric buses is concerned is mishandled by unprofessional people. I would have believed that first the Minister of Transport would have consulted with engineers in Barbados concerning the terrain of Barbados if they can bring the electric buses here. Because from my knowledge, I'm going to take the side of the engineer, is that you know, with electric buses, the whole conversion, it is moving away from the conventional way of mechanics in the sense of, you know, gasoline and electricity. And therefore, you know, I listen to the point of coming from St. Joseph and St. Andrew and St. John and those places. I want the public to know exactly one thing, though, which is on my mind, that the electric buses would operate from a horsepower point of view and current rating terms, and that for a bus to move off at a level, on a level road, would utilize X amount of energy, and moving off in a hill like from St. Andrew, Bashubo coming up them places, Horse Hill, it would move off at X plus Y. You getting to understand what I'm trying to say?
I want to know, have you had any real information about these electric buses beyond the general position that you take about, you know, how they would normally function? Have you had any of the specs and all of that that you can come about this?
Not concerned. I don't have to have the specs about a bus. I am an electrician by profession. I studied physics. I didn't just go there and learn to run away.
Yeah, but each electric bus and stuff, electric vehicles vary in terms of their capacity, battery capacity, and all of that.
That's what I'm talking about. If you really understand.
But I would But in all seriousness, I would expect that we would have a discussion.
That is why I said the Barbados government would have had a discussion with
engineers. I don't tell me about the Barbados government and the engineers. This is about what is discussed with the people of Barbados who pay their taxes. And my only concern...
People of Barbados who pay their taxes are not always knowledgeable about everything.
That is why they need to be informed.
But speaking in the language of engineering, they wouldn't understand.
No, we all come to confuse people ahead and make us believe.
You always tell me about I confuse.
No, I don't tell you that all the time. I'm telling you no. I'm telling you no. That this cannot be dismissed this way. What you are saying to me is that we are not entitled to know. Yeah, that's what you're saying to me. And I don't think that's right.
You're not entitled to know, but giving you information that you don't understand, Mr. Ellis, would it make sense?
I want to be frank about this matter.
I believe that. I believe that these matters, at the end of the day, can be broken down in language that people can understand, which is, at a simple level, have we made this is the justification for the decision that we have made. This is the way, this is the capacity and the efficiency that we expect to get. Basically, those types of questions, when we talk about the cost of maintenance and things like that, what are the pros and cons? What are the differences between going in that direction and staying with what we had? Those are the types of, that's the kind of discussion we're talking about. I don't think that, you know, and it has to be done by somebody who has been involved in this decision as to this particular type of vehicle versus any other. That's what I'm saying. I agree with what you have just said.
Yeah. But I'm trying to say, you mean to say the Transport Board or the Minister of Transport would not have consulted with the engineers before he made the decision to bring the buses, sir?
I am not saying that. But what I say to you is that at a very basic level, we, the public, need to be taken into the confidence of those who make such decisions. There are a couple of areas here where it is as if we are now being put in a position to say, look, you just trust us. You know, just trust us. And to be honest, there are some people who will, and there are those who will not. As simple as that. All right? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program, those of you who are joining us now. I'm trying to hook up with Petra Roach, who works with one of the tourism bodies on this matter of JetBlue. So just in case you come online and I have to make the transition to her, then you will forgive me. But she is in a position where she can explain exactly what is happening with respect to this JetBlue connection between Barbados and the U.S. In the meantime, let me hear from somebody else here. Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah. I got two issues I want to raise here with you. One is, I live in Long Bay, St. Philip. Now, Long Bay and Main Road was under repairs for a while. And then eventually we got it repaired this year, right? So then after the COVID-19 reopening, we had some guys come over to do some work. So I came home from work one day and I realized that when I tried to get into my driveway, I couldn't get in. Some guys from NTW come in, dig up the front parts and then put it on a sidewalk close to the road by the natural gas site. And that went on for about 2 months. Anyway, eventually they did pave the little inner sidewalk, but now that it don't pave, I can't get access to my driveway because the concrete pave is so high up from where the sidewalk is that they put marl there to try to hold it. But when the vehicle go through the marl actually giving way, and the vehicle just working to the bottom. So I spotted one of the guys that working on the job out here, and the guy says to me that they don't have a truck. So they've been waiting on the truck now to get concrete now for apparently for weeks. So I just say that it will draw that to the attention in the public and whoever is responsible for the project over here, I would really like some access to my driveway, please. And that's one issue. I don't know if you have anything to say in relation to
that. Not really.
Okay. The other issue I want to deal with now is the transportation sector pertaining to the PSVs and stuff like that and the policies and stuff like that. Now, there's some unfair things that's happening really in that sector. And everybody seems to be keeping a lot of noise, but nobody seems to be dealing with the cross of the issue. Now, the government came and instituted something called the TAP program, right? So persons that enter into the TAP program, right, they were given, which is some people that have parted from Transport Board, among others, they were given the opportunity to come on the TAP program and get access to duty-free vehicles and stuff like that, right? While the PSV sector, that was there pulling the bulk of the work for eons have no duty free, right? Another thing, though, is the...
Come on, you know that's short term. The only reason they got into the TAP program was because the bottom fell out of the tourism sector where they would normally be working.
They were in the TAP program before the COVID.
Not all of them. We got more of them after COVID came. There were some. But you're saying that, as far as you're concerned, it's not a level playing field.
No, there was always a challenge even before the COVID-19, because if your recollection serves you right, you would know that there were some utterances in relation to the same unfair playing field even before the COVID-19 decided to come and take over.
So what are you recommending? What do you want?
Right, but I just give me a minute and let me develop.
I got somebody else here on the line, as I told you, unless you can wait, because
I did warn
that I needed to hear from this lady. So it's Petra Roach, who is concerned with what they call the global markets, director of global markets for Barbados. Ms. Roach, good afternoon.
How are you, Mr. Ella?
I'm well.
Good.
Now, we had a complaint here from a lady on the telephone coming out of the United States who said that she and other members of the family wanted to come to Barbados for the burial of a close relative, I think it's her grandfather. They booked on JetBlue, and lo and behold, JetBlue has canceled the flight. As far as she's concerned, there's something wrong with that. She's very disappointed. She is not the only person who has said it, though. I have also seen comments here by others who said that a similar thing happened to them. Where there's been, for them, a sudden cancellation of flights. So somebody else says here that they heard of a change protocol for arrival from high-risk countries this morning, which suggests that such persons will have to quarantine for 7 days, even if they have a valid negative test certificate. Could this be the reason for the sudden airline cancellations? What is the truth, Ms. Roach?
Well, let me start by saying that JetBlue continues to be an outstanding partner for Barbados. They have responded to our objective of increasing capacity out of the USA for the past 4 or 5 years. They've opened up new gateways. They opened up the Boston, Newark. They had Fort Lauderdale. And they continue to work very, very closely with us. They have been also the airline who has come to the table when we needed the repatriation flight, and they did so in spite of the negative feedback that we had, obviously, because we had some of the cases being brought in. So they continue to be outstanding in their service to Barbados. We have a very close relationship. They were meant to re-enter the market on July the 25th, and American was coming back into the market on September the 8th. We obviously continue to monitor the situation in our key source markets because the priority for us is the safety of the Barbadian people and to ensure that we do not re-import the virus. We've seen all the stories that say that the USA continues to be trending in the wrong direction. And as the Prime Minister says all the time, we are driven by the data, not the date. So JetBlue had pushed back their service. They were going to come back in with a 4 times weekly service on July the 25th. And we actually, because of the protocols which were changed, which included not only the protocols actually, but because of the fact that the virus continues to be quite virulent in the USA, we then said, let us mitigate the risk. Let us look at what capacity we can handle. And we focus on bringing back visitation from medium-risk countries like Canada and the UK, where the virus is trending downwards. So JetBlue follows the protocols that are established by the countries. They actually, in spite of the fact that we told them and we have changed because of the fluidity of the situation, we continue to change the date of entry, they continue to work with us. So we have now, in order to mitigate the risk, ask them to just fly once a week until we see that there is a change in the fate of the virus in the USA. and we know that we can handle the number of intakes that we have from the USA market.
The question is, what notification have you given to the traveling public that this is the change in approach? Because I suspect that they're caught by surprise.
Yes, but I am sure that you understand that this virus is nothing that we've seen before. It continues to be extremely fluid. We change, you know, we see things that are trending in the right direction and then it changes. And we, again, have to be guided by the empirical data that is in front of us. The last thing that we want to do is inconvenience anyone. That certainly is not the case. But at the same time, we have to be cognizant of the fact that Barbados is 166 square miles. And we have heard all the furor around the importation of the virus. And we have to understand and respect also the local population and their voice.
But the question is, when was that decision communicated to JetBlue?
The decision was communicated to JetBlue on Monday this week because we had long conversations, very intense discussions, looked at all the data, etc., dealt with the Ministry of Health and Wellness. And at one point, we had said that we were going to push back all of the entries from all the airlift capacity out of the USA. Again, because of the fact that there is such a high number of cases in the USA and the virus continues to morph itself so that when you test somebody and it's negative, it may change to something that's positive. So until we understand it better and we see that it's under control better in the USA, we just cannot afford to play with it. We can't. But what we understand is that there are cases like the lady who had the relative who had passed away, unfortunately. You've got people who need medical emergencies. You've got people who are running businesses. So rather than not having any capacity whatsoever, that's why we ask them to push back so that it is a once-a-week service. And again, we're looking at that constantly. And if we see that the number of cases that are coming in actually then slows down or stops, then we can immediately ramp back up the capacity.
Okay.
But it is based on the actual factual information.
Is JetBlue the only airline that is affected in this way?
Well, it's the U.S. carriers.
All
and
of
as
the
I
U.S.
said,
carriers.
The U.S. carriers. So American was supposed to come back in on August the 5th. We have asked them to push back to September the 8th because, as you're aware, that Florida area is the one that is actually the epicenter at the minute. In the New York area, which is where JetBlue comes out of, we've seen a slowing down of the virus and much more responsibility being taken in terms of looking at the borders, et cetera. That's why we feel that we can manage with the once-a-week service out of that, out of the New York hub.
And how do you see the UK and Canada?
The UK is a medium risk, so we've got British Airways coming back in on the 18th. They're coming back in on a once-a-week basis, but we've actually got them the 18th, the 21st, and the 25th. And then in August, they actually increased to twice a week. Again, they're flying with a 777 with 221 seats, so it's manageable. And we're also asking, it's easier in the UK for people to get the pre-test within 72 hours, which, as we've seen in the USA, the feedback has been that it's been quite difficult to get back the results within that 72 period that's allotted. And again, when we were talking to the health officials, if you then spread it to a seven-day period, the probability of infection within that period becomes higher, obviously, and therefore it again presents itself as a challenge.
Canada is said to be low risk. So what would have influenced the decision by WestJet to cancel any flights?
No, WestJet hasn't made a decision to cancel any flights. I mean, at the end of the day, Air Canada was the first service that came back in, again, exactly for that reason, because it's considered, a low to medium risk jurisdiction. We have a twice weekly service out of Canada on Thursdays and Sundays with 120 seats on that aircraft. And again, we had seen that maybe about 70% of those passengers actually did pre-test and come to arrive at Grantley Adams with their negative COVID test results. So Air Canada is going to be ramping up their services in August as well. And WestJet, actually, we were, they have consolidated their capacity around the world so that they're only flying to about five jurisdictions at the minute. And we actually were under an MRG agreement with them, which is going to, which is a summer MRG agreement.
What's an MRG? What's an MRG agreement?
It's an agreement where we agree to support a flight, but they don't feel at the minute that there's enough capacity because the challenges.
MRG that means that we put up some money to a subsidy.
Yes. But at the minute, you've still got the challenge in Canada that people have to quarantine 14 days when they return. And they also had had challenges initially with getting they have a travel ban, which is in place, which means that it negates their travel insurance, which means that if they get ill whilst they're on holiday, they aren't protected. So that means that ultimately there is a smaller percentage of people who would be interested in traveling abroad because of these challenges.
The UK has
a similar problem. Because they also have the UK travel ban, but we actually were put into the bubble of low COVID jurisdictions because of how we've managed the COVID challenge. And they, therefore, do not have to quarantine when they return from Barbados.
Now, the lady who called us put all the blame on WestJet. JetBlue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Based on what you are saying, she is likely to put the blame on the government of Barbados and ask the question. So mm-hmm. having paid my money, mm-hmm. who's going to give it back to me now? If it were JetBlue, she might have been looking to them. But now she's going to say, but wait, the government of Barbados gave this kind of instruction. We never knew about it. So what do you tell that person now in terms of...
The reality is that this is a global challenge. This isn't something that's specific to Barbados as a destination or to JetBlue as an airline. This is a global pandemic, the likes of which we haven't seen ever. What I would say is that JetBlue does have a cancellation policy and that they are flying on Saturdays every week. So therefore, we can try and ensure that she is that she gets a place on one of the Saturday services into the island.
How can you assure?
Certainly if she,
how you can be sure of that?
What I'm saying.
Given the fact that there are so many people who are likely to be in that position. For instance, I spoke mm-hmm. to a friend a few days ago before all mm-hmm. of this, and he was looking forward to trying to get back to Barbados. He then said to me that the flights, the JetBlue flights that were then in place were already full. So,
right, the JetBlue service on the 25th is full, but I'm actually just trying to pull it up at the minute to look at the capacity on the next Saturday, which is the first. And
I just suggest that your demand is going it's going to be difficult to see how all of these people now can be fitted onto one, one flight.
Okay, I'm looking at the service on Saturday, August the 1st, and there's currently capacity on there. Leaving JFK at 8 o'clock, arriving here at 12:35. So there is the ability to go right now and book that flight on Saturday, the August 1st. Unfortunately, I've pulled it up in my app. Based on points,
okay.
It's telling me that I can pay 71,000 points for that service.
What were the difficulties associated with communicating this information to the public earlier?
Again, the protocols and the whole risk assessment is a very, very fluid situation. And it was felt very strongly that the USA market was just too volatile in terms of the percentage of people who contracted the virus and the number of deaths that continue to be there. That is the simple mathematical equation on which it's based.
Do you know, there are those who would tell you that when the decision was made to reopen Barbados to more of this activity, mm-hmm. there was already an indication that the situation in the United States was going north.
We had also seen that there was a lulling in the northeast of the country. That will be shown in terms of the numbers. And it's very interesting that we're trying to take a very pragmatic and responsible approach in terms of ensuring that the population of Barbados continues to be protected from this very difficult virus. And people have to understand that. It's not a decision that's taken lightly whatsoever. We know that we have to open back up the tourism industry. That's why we've gone through the numbers. We've identified that the Canadian market can be handled, that the UK market can be handled, but the UK continues to be a hotspot.
Yes.
Sorry, the USA continues to be a hotspot.
I think many people understand that, but the way that this has unfolded for those who trusted the airline and trusted the government leaves those people feeling hard done.
David, I would say to you that, again, we are not in this as an isolated unit. This is a worldwide problem. It is a worldwide situation. Several airlines are now going under because of the challenge of COVID. You know, we've had situations where St. Lucia opened up, they had to close back down. Jamaica opened up, they had to change their protocol. It is not isolated to Barbados. And we are taking this really, really seriously and responsibly. I cannot reiterate how many hours a day we sit down drilling over the numbers of infections overseas and making sure that we can handle this as a country, because it is so important. And we're looking at this as a soft opening for tourism. Tourism, the high point of our year is obviously the winter season. So we need to make sure that we get, you know, we do this cautiously so that we don't end up throwing out the baby with the bathwater, not being able to reopen fully for the winter season, which is when most people will make their money. It is a difficult situation.
Agreed.
And we commiserate with everyone. We've got and this is a conversation like politics. You know, I say to everybody has a different opinion. It is such a difficult space to be in because we're trying to do well by everybody. And again, you know, JetBlue has come to the table. We've done the repatriation flights where we understood that people were stranded abroad and we had to get them home. We had to get them home in spite of all the furor around the fact that there are so many cases in the USA. And we did that. And we will continue to do that if we see that there is not enough capacity. But at the end of the day, as I said, the current status is that they're coming in once a week on Saturdays. American has been pushed back to September the 8th. And again, based on the fluidity and demand, we will then look and the reality of the situation in the USA, we will then seek to either, as the Prime Minister says, break or accelerate.
Now, I suppose you can respond to this question of, is this a price we pay for what people may see as a premature decision, a decision to come to reopen prematurely?
We were actually one of the slower ones to open. Again, because of the seriousness of the situation. We had Antigua opened on June the 1st, you know. Barbados opened up to commercial flights on July the 12th. It was not an easy decision. And again, what we did was we opened with limited capacity. We opened with enough capacity that we knew that we could handle it if it were that we had a reimportation of a case. The protocols that have been put in place ensures as much as is humanly possible that we isolate any potential reimportation and that does not spread, because that will not do our country well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Petra Roach, for coming on the line and clarifying for us this situation with respect to the cancellation of JetBlue flights, some JetBlue flights. Now, if you have time, you can decide whether you want to stay on the line and answer any further questions from the public, or you can decide whether you want to go right now.
Which I actually am late for a call.
Okay.
But please feel free to call me back if you need
Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you so much. Okay, have a great day.